My name is Dr. Toby Perlman. I'm a clinical psychologist in Chicago, and I'm the manager of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program for Advocate Illinois Masonic Medical Center, which is part of a large healthcare system called Advocate Healthcare. So I want to start by just saying thank you for coming. We started our health information website, which is called Learn Health, Live Healthy, several years ago. And since then, we've been able to post sign language videos, streaming videos, regarding HIV/AIDS, STDs, breast health, diabetes, smoking cessation, and we'll soon have one on there giving information about depression. We also have screenings in American Sign Language to help screen for anxiety disorder, depression, risk of heart attack in the next 10 years, risk of becoming infected with HIV or other STDs, and readiness to stop smoking. And our major funders have been the Illinois Department of Public Health, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation, the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, and most recently, the American Legacy Foundation. I have no relationships to disclose. So often when we think of low literacy adults, we think of low English proficiency. And we try to overcome that and make our materials more accessible by either lowering the reading level to make it easier for people to understand, but that can be very difficult when the concepts you're trying to communicate are complicated. And so the other option is to then translate our English-based materials into the language of the native language of the users. But that doesn't always work because that assumes that the users are literate in their native language. And so what happens is you sometimes have consumers whose native language has a written component, but they demonstrate low literacy in that language. Or the consumer's native language has no written component, which is common for many languages, and I'm going to be focusing on American Sign Language. So when a person has difficulty in gathering health information through reading, either because they avoid reading completely, because either their native language doesn't have a written component, or they're not literate in their native language and they have a difficult time reading English, it requires person-to-person contact, either verbal and or visual, and face-to-face or virtual presence. And by virtual presence, I mean having someone actually communicating to you face-to-face but through the internet. To be accessible through the internet, however, it requires having streaming videos so that you either have someone who's talking right to you or, in the case of sign language, having someone signing right to you. So in order to start a website for health information for people who require face-to-face learning, then you have to first receive permission from the authors, and in most cases that was very easy. Sometimes they gave us permission to translate the materials into sign language and use it, and they said that the users of our website will have permission to reproduce it for personal use, and sometimes they said that it's in the public domain and it really didn't matter. Then you translate the questions into the user's native language and then back translate to make sure that you captured the essence of the original questions. And then translate the results back into the provider's native language. For now, we're just translating it back to printed English so that you can be sure that the results of their screenings will actually be understood by their provider the way that they were meant to be. And for health screenings for people who have difficulty learning through reading, you have to provide the description of the screening, a disclaimer in their language, questions that need to be answered, the interactive responses, and then documented portable results. And I'm going to go through each of those. For the description of the screenings, we can't assume that somebody who's never been exposed to screenings before really understands what a screening even is, and so you need to explain that to them in their language. And so here we have our narrator who was signing and explaining what the online screening for anxiety was. For the disclaimer, which is necessary when you do a healthcare screening over the internet, it's important that you, number one, let them know the limitations of the screening. So, for example, for the anxiety and the depression one, you need to be 18 or older, and it explains that if you're under 18, to please tell your parent or guardian and have them, you know, talk to a provider to help you with that. Also, you give copyright restrictions and explain what I just explained to you before and talk about liability. And here's an example from our site. And they need to check that before they can move on. Then the questions that need to be answered. So you go through the different questions that are worthy in the original screening, and you explain it in whatever language they have. In this case, it's sign language. And then their interactive responses. It's important when you're dealing with a group of people who are not familiar with taking screenings as much as we are, because it's never been presented to them in their own native language, is to explain exactly what they need to do. And so I'm going to give you some questions, and then I'm going to ask you to click on yes and no, or I'm going to ask you to click on some numbers. And then it's important to have documented portable results, so that they can take the results to their provider, and we can know that the provider is understanding those results. We also have a place where they can click for referrals, and we explain those referrals in sign language, but we also help them navigate the referral, and we might say, you're going to be asked to put your zip code in there, and after you do that, then click on whatever, and then it's going to ask you how many miles you're willing to travel to find a provider. So we can't assume that they understand any of that. And here's an example. It's difficult to read, but this is an example of a printout that someone filled out, and they said they were experiencing anxiety. For the online anxiety screening, there's 10 questions, and if they answer, endorse any of them, it means that they meet the criteria for an anxiety disorder. So this person, all this has been explained to them in sign language before they print it out. This is what they're going to be bringing to the provider. Helping the user navigate the website. So this says, the person signing to them, that the questionnaire estimates your risk. Oops. I think I went too far, sorry. For helping the user navigate the website, it explains to them what you can do. You can print the information and then ask your doctor to fill in the answers. Or you can complete the form and print your responses and bring them with you to share. So in other words, it explains to someone, this is for the one that determines your risk for a heart attack in the next 10 years. There's a lot of really important questions they need to answer to be able to get that feedback. And so we explain to them that they need to understand their cholesterol, they need to understand their HDL, they need to understand what their blood pressure is. And if they don't, they should print a blank form and then bring that to their doctor and find out that information. So that would be the print, and then it says, but if you do know this information, then continue. We also give them some help in navigating the system once they've actually started the screening. So here's an example where they've been asked what their cholesterol is, and it says, if you do not know your cholesterol level, stop taking this questionnaire and make an appointment with a doctor. It's important information to know. And then if they do know it, they continue on with the screening. Incorporating health education into the screening when appropriate. Okay, so here's an example. When you actually go on to the website that originally had this screening there, what it does is it just basically asks you 6 questions and asks you to fill in your cholesterol and your HDL and your systolic blood pressure number and are you a smoker? And then then you click on calculate, and it tells you what your risk is for having a heart attack in the next 10 years. However, most of the people who require having streaming videos because they have difficulty taking in information through reading aren't really exposed to a lot of those terms. And so we've incorporated into the actual screening some health education. So here's an example. What's your systolic blood pressure? Your blood pressure is made up of two numbers, for example, 120 over 80. When your heart pumps, it contracts, and then it is at rest. In our example, 120 is your blood pressure when your heart is contracted, and the 80 is your blood pressure when your heart is at rest. In the example of 120 over 80, your systolic blood pressure is 120. And then they would be asked to fill it in if they do know it. The usability study. The idea of developing a website for a special population is a process. It's not a project with an end. And so we are continuously doing usability studies. And in fact, it was recommended that that this be the approach that people use when they develop their web. So research-based evidence supports an iterative design approach. This is from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. You test the website, you make changes, and then you retest it to see how usable it is for your audience. The method is to is task-oriented. You give the people who are participating a task. It's usually one-on-one, so you can follow them in their thinking as to what it's like for them to participate. You ask them to discuss or think aloud. And it usually takes about 1 hour, because it's hard to spend more than an hour to really focus on what you're doing and express each step and what your thoughts are to someone. What you assess is their ability to complete that task, the time needed to complete the task, and user satisfaction. What's important, though, is that the facilitator be of the same culture of the participant. So in our case, our facilitators for these usability studies will be someone from the deaf community. Participants found more problems or errors, they made more suggestions, and they identified more culturally sensitive materials in the study that was done by Vatrapu and Perez Quinones. And they were working with East Indian population and learned a lot more in their usability study when the people were actually paired with a facilitator that matched their culture. Goodness of fit. Culture influences how people interact with computers. And so it's important here to make sure that you don't mismatch the website with the cultural needs of the users. So one example of that is that you want to make sure that the attitudes and the beliefs, the attitudes and the beliefs and the behaviors of the people who develop the website match well with the people who are going to be using it. So an example of that is that the people who developed our website were white, hearing, corporate people, including me. Okay, and the people who are going to be using the website are, many of them are not part of the corporate world, and they're deaf, and of different races and different ethnic groups. And so it's important when we actually have our facilitators that they do match the cultural needs of the people, the users who are taking that. So an example of how culture influences how people interact with computers is that for us, white hearing corporate people, efficiency is really important, and we like to know that things could get done quickly. And so in most usability studies, they examine how quickly the people are able to complete the task. And something we have not yet been able to demonstrate statistically, but that we are trying to investigate, is does that mean this is that is efficiency and the speed with which you complete the task something that's also important to people who are deaf? And the reason we're wondering that is because, number one, when we put on deaf events, usually we have to leave more time for that event than we would normally for a hearing event. And that's because deaf people there's no such thing as a deaf neighborhood, and they're scattered throughout. And so when they have the opportunity to get together and socialize, it's a very positive experience. And whereas we might be looking at our clock and thinking, okay, I have to go do this, for them, it's really much more of a positive experience to hang around and be there. And so it would be interesting to find out whether it's whether a virtual presence with a deaf person signing to you on the computer is as pleasant an experience as it is when you're face-to-face. And so maybe for them, how quickly you get through the task might not be as satisfying as it is to a hearing person. Also, a user's mental model seeks a particular pattern when navigating the website. And one way that we've used this is initially, it was a big struggle just to get them to do streaming videos for my large corporation, which has turned out to be very supportive now, though. But initially, I was told we had to start with an English, English words in our homepage, and then we would, scroll over something and have people pop up and do sign language. And what we're trying to do now is switch that so that the first thing that pops up is someone signing, since that is much more matching with the mental model of a deaf person. Here's a sample task of what we ask someone to do. We ask for the start time on the computer, ask them to go to www.advocatehealth.com/deaf, which in fact is our website, go to screenings, take the anxiety screening, and then we don't read their results, but we ask them to print it and just sign off that they actually were able to do that, and then ask them how easy or difficult it was. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, so do we have any questions for any of our speakers today?
The gentleman left has had a question for you.
Yes, sir, and then I'll come here and you. Dr. Linnaeus?
Has Zucker had looked at a 5-year period for weight loss treatment efficacy, and just like cancer treatments are usually 5 years. So this is one, and that's a lot longer than many other studies, so I'm complimenting you, but I'm wondering whether you're thinking of going out to the 5-year gold standard.
You've read our minds, yes. Thank you for that question. We were only funded it was a 3-year R01, and it's hard to do it, all the formative work and the intervention study in that amount of time. But we feel very fortunate to have the 12 months in that first R01, and so we now have funding from the NHLBI to do a 5-year study. And so we've extended the intervention period to 18 months. We had actually proposed to do 24 months because one of our primary aims is to look at long-term. What we talk about is doing long-term weight loss and helping people sustain the weight loss. They cut off the last 6 months. So we have 18 months in the new study, and we're real excited about that. But you're absolutely right. The trick is, the other thing that we had proposed was doing weight gain prevention in a workplace environment, because we know it's not, although 65% might be eligible because that's the estimate from the general population of who's overweight or obese, we also know that as employees age, people are gaining weight, and so we want to actually focus some new attention on weight gain prevention. So that's not in the NHLBI study, but that's where we're headed next. So the longer-term weight loss and weight gain prevention are the two areas that we're actually looking for.
Right.